So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
politics.com, or you can visit us for all the latest, join our RSS feed, get up to date on what we're talking about on the show every night, and just take it from there. And I tell you what, man, it's been a big day. You know, the president got inaugurated for the second term. This president, who continues talking about bipartisanship, decided he wanted to alienate any chances of anything like that happening by attacking the Republicans throughout his inaugural address. So many things, it's incredible. We're going to get into some local issues to start the show, and we'll switch on to that stuff in a few minutes. In the meantime, hello, Mr. Martin. How are you?
All right, Mr. Springsteen.
Man, I'm telling you what, I'm hoping the BTR got all their sound problems straightened out. I've been playing with Skype all weekend, so it wasn't Skype, so hopefully we don't have the same issues we had the last week. You know, for those of you listeners who listen in every day, you know what I'm talking about. It's good to hear from you, my friend. I tell you, we've got a lot going on a local area here. One of the favorites near and dear to my heart has to do with the Louisville Metro Council. This story came out over the weekend, and it's something I knew about in advance, thanks to our good friend Jerry Miller, Metro Councilman from District 19. Apparently, the Louisville Metro Council is now asking for the authority to have subpoena power for the Ethics Commission. As everybody knows, you know, I went after Judy Greene through the Ethics Commission, and that ultimately led to her impeachment. But the hard thing was you really couldn't compel anybody to testify. It's a voluntary situation. And we found out the same thing with Barbara Shanklin after she continually walked out of the daggone hearing. So this, to me, is a great step in the right direction. It's something I've been asking for a couple of years. Looks like the Metro Council is asking for it. The entire leadership, including Council President Jim King, the Democratic Caucus Chairman David James in the 6th District, even Vicky Welch in the 13th, is asking for the same thing. And, of course, the Republican Caucus Chairman and Ken Fleming and the GOP Caucus Vice Chair Jerry Miller. I think it's a great thing, man. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's a great thing, too, because anybody anybody locally that watched the Shanklin mess? I mean, the Green thing was kind of entertaining. The Shanklin mess was absolutely maddening when her attorney just looked at her and said, get up, go home. And
oh,
there
yeah.
were no ramifications as she waddled out of the room. Right? You know, that's the thing. It's even bad theater without subpoena powers. It's a waste of taxpayer dollars, a waste of the news. It's an absolute waste without subpoena powers because you end up with exactly what we got with Shanklin when they just said, get up and walk out. You know, what's your name?
It's pretty clear.
You're taking the fifth on your name. There are no ramifications. So, yeah, I mean, it's a waste of taxpayer dollars without it. And, you know, I think actually that could be an indirect move that it brings a whole lot more transparency and honesty to the Metro Council and our local government when all of a sudden, you know, if somebody breaks a story, then bam, just like that, you know, you don't need a criminal complaint. They have subpoena power, so you might, you know, if you're doing anything, you might want to stop it now.
Well, it was pretty clear to me when I went through that whole process. For one thing, you know, you're right. It does waste a lot of the taxpayer money because you're required to have this Ethics Commission hearing, you know, and then you've got to fight to try to get any information. You know, that it takes up time. It takes up resources. These lawyers get paid by the hour at $150 an hour on average. So, you know, when you look at all this in play, I mean, this whole thing, we could have saved probably half the money just on legal fees alone. You know, and then there's a lot of other things that the Metro Ethics Commission really needs to get tweaked, including counsel and things like that. But that's something we'll move going forward. But this right now is the first step. It has to change at state level. Julie Denton, State Senator Julie Denton, is going to pursue it. She's agreed to go ahead and sponsor it. But she says, you know, she's not sure that we're going to get what we want in that because, you know, a lot of the legislators are going to fear the subpoena power might be abused. No, what they're going to fear is not the abuse of the subpoena power. They're going to fear the subpoena power might be used. There's a difference here. So we're going to see how that works out. But I think it's a step in the right direction, and I urge everybody to call their state representative and their state senator and to please tell them to approve this. This is a major milestone if we can get it approved into getting accountability so we don't have this two-year drag-out mess like we had, you know, with Judy Greene, like we're in the middle of with Barbara Shanklin. This won't be decided until at least April. You know, so we've got a lot of things here. So I'm glad to see that, you know. So I want to get the sunshine. And when your legislature tells you that they're scared it's going to be abused, ask them what they're scared of. Because the courts use subpoena power every single day. Are the subpoena powers by the courts abused every single day? I don't think so. They follow the law.
No, you know, and on top of that, you know, we always hear about the courts being overloaded. So ultimately some of these things make it to the court system and overload the court with, you know, and not, like you said, I failed to note that these council people and these government people, when they go, they're racking up massive lawyer bills to fight something that doesn't even have the teeth of a subpoena. It's all on the taxpayer's dime. So, you know, I think if a state lawmaker says, well, we're afraid it'll be abused, and you just say, well, you know what, I'm the voter, and if I suspect my councilman or my state rep or somebody is abusing such power, I'll just vote him out for being a jerk.
Well, I can tell you from my experience, it was an insult to what these commission hearings are all about. It was an insult to the average intelligence of any citizen of Louisville at that time. It was an insult to the process of getting accountability and holding people accountable, period. You know, the Ethics Commission is a legal commission that's designed to help us get that sunshine and that transparency and that accountability. And when you see lawyers like Barbara Shanklin's lawyer or like Judy Greene's lawyer, where they could just leave at will and didn't respect the process, and how in the hell do we expect them to respect their job? So I'm looking forward to seeing it. Hopefully it'll get passed. I'll be putting pressure on that myself. We'll see where it goes. And I'll tell you, another story coming out by Jared Downs over at the Courier-Journal. You know, this is the reason why. This is one of the reasons why we've got to be able to get to the bottom of government abuse of our tax dollars and hold them accountable to how they're spending it. According to Jared Downs over at the Courier-Journal, Kentucky poverty is the fifth worst in the United States. Now, think about that, folks. Our poverty problem is the fifth worst in the United States, but our elected officials don't want to be held accountable to how they spend our money. That tax money is something that could help towards fixing that poverty, couldn't it? You know, so what we've got here is Mississippi is actually the worst, but we're the fifth worst. But what's interesting here, too, is everybody automatically assumes because, you know, when you look at poverty back in the day and it went down south, poverty was really bad. And a lot of people automatically assume since it's MLK Day, we'll go there. A lot of people automatically assume the face of Kentucky poverty is a black woman with six or seven kids. And that's not true in Kentucky. The face of Kentucky poverty is most often white and female with children. They've got a thing called the price of poverty, and I'm going to put this out there. The price of poverty will be airing tonight at 8 o'clock on KET. KET television journalist Renee Shaw is going to be looking at this and doing a story on this. But you know, it's very, very interesting because we continue to look at this, and what really happens here? About 19% of Kentucky residents live in poverty. That's about 800,000 people. It's higher today than it was when Barack Obama took office. Think about that one. Barack Obama is adding over 11,000 people per day to the food stamp rolls since he's been in office. So food stamps are a good sign of poverty. We know poverty is getting worse. But this is a story I think people really need to look at and pay attention to if you're interested in what's going on in Kentucky. And it goes all the way down to the local level. When we look here in Louisville, we look at the money that Judy Green basically embezzled, in my opinion. Barbara Shanklin is in the middle of right now. And they're not alone. They're not alone. But, you know, they take these low-income areas, which typically those two represent when you get into Newburgh and District 1-2. You take these low-income areas, you use your discretionary funds to buy political favor, but you're not really helping the people on the street. And now we've got a problem in Kentucky being fifth worst in poverty. That's because we've got to get control of our money. I think that's a great example of that. Would you agree?
Well, I would say that, but I would also say that, you know, just aside from, you know, the transparency, I think we need some transparency for small business and stuff. Because one of the reasons we have poverty, one, is education. You know, you got to wonder, we take a fair amount of money into education, probably not enough, but we're obviously not getting the bang for our buck because, you know, one in eight people is, or, you know, whatever, 18% of our population is in poverty. So education, you know, being the key, is not working. So we need transparency there. You know, as you were saying, maybe a little subpoena power. Find out why the school systems aren't working. I'm not saying that there is corruption, but, you know.
I'm flat out saying there's corruption. I'm not going to beat around the bush. Go ahead.
Well, I don't know. So I won't say because I don't know. But yeah, after a few beers, I'd probably come to that conclusion, but I think the other thing is aside from all the corruption and everything else, is we're fifth worst in the nation. And, you know, I'm going to get on my high horse and I'm going to say that it's small business. Small business is not working. You know, it's not working in this state. I can tell you it's not working in this state because I am a small business person. And, you know, when are lawmakers going to wake up? You know, you've got people like Bob Jindal down in Louisiana saying, hey, let's just do away with business taxes.
Oh, I'm totally with you.
You got people everywhere. And if you're in Kentucky, the work comp is a joke. If you're an employer, it's basically just a money filtration system. You know, the insurance, the health insurance is a joke. The taxation is a joke. And they're not doing anything. And here we are, fifth worst in the nation in poverty. And our lawmakers are diddling around, figuring out who's going to get what contract to build a power substation or put a paper thin coating of asphalt on a certain road. And everybody's happy. And you got the political class, the corporate class, and you've got everybody else underneath pissed off.
Well, it's fascinating, too, because here's some startling numbers for you. The Golden Triangle, that's the area between Louisville, Lexington, and Cincinnati. We're actually do better than the rest of the state. You know, but according to James Ziliak, he's professor and founder of the Center for Poverty Research at UK. He says even though we do better than the rest of the state, just in this little triangle area, more than 60% of the poor have at least one person in a house who works a job. Now think about that. You're still considered in poverty, and you've got at least one person in a household who works a job. He said it's so bad that earning growth is so stagnant The wages are about the same now as they were in the late 70s after being adjusted for inflation. I agree with that. I think most people would agree with that. You know, that's a startling thing to me. Here we are, you know, more than three decades later, and we're making the same money over 30 years later when you figure in inflation and prices. You know, and that's incredible. Nobody can live on what we're doing today.
And a lot of that could be because of part-time work. A lot of that could be because of temp work when you average it in over a year, sporadic work. So, yeah, it's tough. And as I've always said, you know, there's the large businesses, the ones that you're familiar with, they'll grind you up, spit you out, get you out of there before you're actually unemployment or benefit ready. Those companies, amazingly, those are the ones that the government tends to go for because they put up big old buildings and they're good for headlines and they're going to hire massive, you know, we're going to hire 400 people. Well, we could hire 100 people if they gave them full-time work. It's going to be 400 because everybody's working 15 hours, you know.
And that's the thing because Obamacare is going to make it worse. Obamacare, a lot of businesses are now going to part-time workers for their permanent staff just to avoid the tenets of Obamacare. And that's a travesty, too. We're not looking at job creation, and we're not looking at wealth. We're looking at you know, I'm sorry, folks, socialism, communism. When you start going down the road that we're going down, where does it end? And I tell you, we've got a lot of reasons, you know, for these problems, but here's a sample of what's going on. You've got the Kentucky Commission on Human Rights, who has decided to put out their resolutions. And, of course, they deal with nothing but, you know, social justice initiatives, if you want to put a label on that. You know, but a summary of their resolutions right now, they think one of the most important things to do in this state is support efforts to increase voter participation. However, they don't mention one thing about independence. You know, the voter participation is the people we vote in who make the laws that put us into poverty and keep us there. They're not helping small business. They're not helping job creation. They're putting mandates on us that are unsustainable. So elections are very important here, folks. You know, and one of their things is support efforts to increase voter participation in Kentucky. So when you look at this at face value, you're thinking, wow, this is pretty good. You know, all eligible voters should be afforded fair opportunities to vote. But then you've got to look at what they want. They want laws that are going to have early voting. They're going to have access to polling places on weekends. I don't think we've got a problem with that as long as we can prove eligibility. But fewer restrictions on absentee voting. But that's the problem now. Absentee voting is too free in many places because there's no accountability. They want to vote by mail and they want same-day voter registration. Not one thing is mentioned about, you know, excluding the independents. And the stuff that they're mentioning right now is prominent in other states that elected Barack Obama without any proof of any eligibility. You know, and of course, they're still on this kick about raising the high school dropout age to 18 in Kentucky. You know, does Kentucky rank high as states, you know, when it comes to school dropout rates? Sure they do. You know, those school dropout rates are high, and allowing you to drop out at age 16 certainly isn't doing the world any favors. So I'll let everybody fight over what they want to do with that. But at the same token, I don't want somebody that's at least 16 years old, basically a grown man, you know, in a school that doesn't want to be there, raising hell and keeping other people from learning either. You know, so I'm kind of torn on that issue myself. Of course, they want to amend the Kentucky Civil Rights Act to include sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes. Everybody's jumping on the, you know, I'm gay and I'm here kind of a deal these days. You know, so when we look at some of these things, I don't see one thing here about employment. I don't see one thing here about urging Kentucky to help the poverty-stricken or the poor. To me, that's a social justice and an economic justice issue that the Rice Commission should be talking about. I don't see one thing in here about, you know, earmarking money or something for West End redevelopment. You know, that's a big issue here in Louisville. That's one I've been on ground for a long, long time. You know, in 2006, I put together a $10 million initiative package that I wanted to spend in the West End to create jobs in one of the most poverty-stricken areas of Louisville, and nobody wanted to do it. Oh, Jerry Abramson said he would, but he didn't do a damn thing as usual. So, you know, how can we have a Rice Commission? We get these numbers that say poverty. We're the fifth in the nation in poverty. We don't have any jobs. Wages are stagnant and everything else. And all the Rice Commission cares about is making it easier to vote for a liberal Democrat and not worry about the economic social justice issues that are really destroying what we've got. What's the deal? Why are people scared to tackle this subject?
Well, I think one of the reasons is I've always said, you know, it's just like the major parties. It's about power consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you need them, if you're you're a voter and you need the government to babysit you, if you need the government to help you out, maybe you're truly in need, then you vote your interest. And right now, if you can get more people voting and that's your interest, then you know, that's how they're going to vote. It is, unfortunately, such things are just flat out, they're liberal. They're designed to bolster votes for the Democrats because
right.
That people vote their pocketbooks, whether it's empty or wherever your money comes from, that's how you vote. And I've always said, you know, I'm going to advocate for a working man. I'm going to advocate for the small businessman. And the thing is if you work on if your angle on social justice is, if I said I was for social justice,
mm-hmm.
It would be much more oriented towards getting people jobs. Because, hey, guess what? You know, if you didn't get a job, you vote your interest. And, you know, you talk it over with your small business owner, employer, or maybe you own the small business. And you know what? You start voting your interest. And that's not such a reliable vote at that point. Those votes can be volatile. They can be, you can get a small businessman that can say, oh, those damn Republicans, or you can get a businessman or employee that says, all those damn Democrats, they're making it harder for me to keep a job and to keep viable. So,
well, you know, Warren Buffett had a quote today. You know, he was quoting that, you know, the Republicans need to put the country first instead of the party. Now, coming from the hypocrite Warren Buffett, I don't put much stock in that statement because Warren Buffett could give a shit less about this country. He's making his. But, you know, why is it that the average American has decided that, you know, this liberal agenda is okay and not putting the country first? Because they're defying common sense. Let's go to the phones. I believe this is our good friend Andy. Is this Andy?
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you, Mr. Hodges?
Well, on this day of reflection, and I'm a little concerned. I'm like you, Ed. But let me see if I can help shed a little light on some of these things.
Please do.
You were talking about us being number five in the nation. Remember I told you last year I was supposed to work at a job up in the Appalachians? And,
yes, I did.
It's titled the Appalachian Reinvestment Act.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the people that apply for a job can't pass the drug screen.
Right.
Okay. But then if they hire too many people outside of that area, that violates the spirit of the grant.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to education, Jefferson County, we already know people are willing to go to jail here because they're abandoning ship. They'd rather take their chance in Oldham County. They'd rather take their chance in Bullitt County. They'd rather take their chance across the bridge. It is not the money. It's not lack of money. What it is we have lost focus on the fundamentals. It's just
Andy, you're sounding funny. There you go. You're back. Go ahead.
Yeah, I said we've lost focus on the fundamentals because every 4 years for somebody to get their doctorate, they got to put forth their thesis. It's the colors of the room. I mean, I'm surprised they haven't really decided to change the color of the room, to cut down anger.
Let's cut to the chase here, Andy. I mean, really, truly, we know that we've got problems with education and everything else, and they continue screaming about money. However, education funding has went up astronomically just in the last decade. You know, even though the same percentage of our budget is being spent on education, all right, it's still about a 40 to 50% increase in education dollars because our budget has increased so much. You know, we spend the same amount of money on education percentage-wise, but that money equates to almost 1.5 times what it was just a decade ago, and our schools and our education system has not increased 1.5 times. So they've got plenty of money. Now, if they're going to sit here and they're going to gripe about money and they're going to gripe about poverty and the inability to create jobs, we continue throwing money. Do you guys remember that little electric battery thing that they were supposed to build? Turned out to be a big hoax, that little three-wheel car thing? It turned out to be a big hoax, the Zap or something, whatever it was called. It turned out to be a big hoax, but this governor was willing to commit millions and millions of dollars to this thing, even though that thing had already been proven to be a hoax in at least 3 or 4 other states, before they ever came to Kentucky. I researched it. This was a joke, but nobody researched it. He wanted to act like he was doing something green. Well, that's millions and millions of dollars that could have went to a legitimate company to increase jobs or help small business. So the point is, these guys continue saying that we need more money. But instead of focusing on what we've got to do to make more money, like help create jobs that will pay into a tax base that the state receives their money from, I mean, that's how they get paid, folks, is on your taxes. But rather than focus on spending money to create jobs, we're going to spend all our time putting out an ad campaign that says everybody should vote if they're 5 years old or they're 100 years old. We're going to make sure they vote and they get to vote liberal because we're not going to appreciate process. So, you know, that's my problem. Why is they don't get the basic idea here that it takes money to make money, but you can't continue giving money away that you don't have?
Well, what they're doing, they're actually trying to turn the state of Kentucky into one big national park. They're trying to complete the Olmstead Brothers process here.
Have anybody looked at the Olmstead deal? Have you actually looked at the Olmstead Parks plan? What a joke.
Mm-hmm.
What a joke. We're living 50 years ago. Go ahead.
But I'm just saying, we talked about this on the radio. First of all, black people, as far as education, the girls are getting through school, but with the high dropout rate, most what you got is mostly males.
Right.
And they're dropping out, and 70% of them are going to jail. And that's been a cottage industry. See, it's just like busing.
All right,
see,
so let me ask you this. Let's get into this dropout first. I want to break this down while we go along, Andy, so you got to apologize to me for interrupting.
No,
70%, 70% of these dropouts, these male dropouts, are going to jail, right? And what are they going to jail for? What are they doing when they drop out of school?
Oh, a little bit of everything. Petty crime.
A little bit of everything. Petty crime. They're breaking into houses or dealing drugs, using drugs, whatever, right? Now, why are they doing that? Because they're in a high poverty stricken area where there are no jobs or giving them anything positive to look forward to, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So here we go. I think that's what it is. I think I'm going to give even the kids that are dropping out, I'm going to give them some credit. They look around at the world around them, okay? And let's just say you're in West Louisville, or let's say you're in South Louisville, or any part of Louisville where the economy's not working. And every day since you've been old enough to go out and ride your big wheel or something, you've seen it. A lot of guys standing around, no jobs, you know, no grocery stores, few if any factories. You know, there might be a warehouse or two, some part-time work, but you know, there's no jobs to be had. So you go to school, and what do they tell you when you're in school? Well, you know, you need to make good grades. You need to graduate. Why?
Well,
you need a job. Yes,
you take
a
16-year-old kid,
and where am I going to do that? You know, I've looked around. My universe is kind of small, so hey, get on a TART bus and ride to a different side of town. You know, ride, take a tour,
well,
ride, see what jobs are. And yeah, I think that's the big thing. I think a lot of crime would go away if there were opportunities. If a young man or young woman, I agree. If they look around and say, hey, you know, if you don't get a felony and you do get a high school degree, you can get a job and you can buy that house down the street later on.
That's the whole thing because we're not focusing. On the beginning, we're focusing on the back end, not the front end. Instead of focusing on the cause, we're wanting to put Band-Aids on a problem and try to act like it's a cure. Andy, you were going to say something. Go ahead.
Business Ed has got a point, but see, this is the problem. We've raised two generations, solid generations of people who don't have a work ethic, okay? And when you take people that go, okay, the school system got caught with their proverbial pants down when the economic system changed here, and they didn't adjust. And they keep putting out these people. I'm not from here, but think about it. How did most of the guys around here get work?
Right.
Say, up in the 90s, it was friends and kids. If mama or daddy worked at Ford, or auntie or somebody worked at GE, they got you an application. And you got in. Okay.
Right.
Now that the job market is tightened and it requires you to show up with some skills, friends and kin is not working like it used to.
Nothing works like it used to, though. That's the whole thing. I mean, you know, the realistic, I mean, here's the deal for me. Now, everybody wants to scream about Ronald Reagan raising national debt and things like that, and I'm totally on board with that. But Ronald Reagan also raised taxes, and nobody wants to talk about that either. But, you know, when you look at Reagan, the first thing Reagan did when he came into office was what? He started spending money. Granted, it was borrowed money, but he did that to create jobs and to create a new thing, because we came out of Jimmy Carter, which actually started prior to him under Nixon and Ford and Watergate. But we came out of Jimmy Carter and everything else coming from that era and realized that, you know, this socialism plan just ain't really going to work. Reagan knew that we had to create jobs. What happened since Ronald Reagan that told everybody that we didn't have to create jobs? Because when you look at the 70% of black males who are going to prison because of dropping out of school and getting into drugs, petty theft, all the other things you're looking at, you know, it's clearly obvious. If you're a 16-year-old kid and you're living in poverty, and folks, I lived in poverty. I know what that feels like. I didn't make the choice to go out and sell drugs. I didn't make the choice to do a lot of the things that these guys are doing. But at the same time, back when I was growing up in that poverty, not everybody had a damn gun, and you didn't have all this pressure to do it or else, you know. So, you know, and I'm not going to get into the gun issue either. Forget that. But here's the reality of it, okay? You've got choices. If you're a 16-year-old kid, you're going to high school, and your choice is to use a free lunch card every day for lunch, wear hand-me-down shoes with holes in them, or clothes that don't fit or match, and you're made fun of every day of your life because you're poor, you know, and some drug dealer walks up to you and flashes wide $100 bills and
to make money,
what are you going to do?
Well, I was going to say, throw into that that the overpaid bureaucrats at the Jefferson County school system have decided that you need to ride a bus for 2.5 hours to go
sure.
to some school far away from home that your mom or your dad will never be able to go visit for a PTA meeting because they don't have a car in TARC.
Right.
You know, it's a 3.5 hour ride for them if they get on TARC.
Well, see, and that's exactly it. So we're having no opportunity, and we're still sitting here. You know, this Kentucky Human Rights Commission wants to sit here and talk about the social justices, and economics are a part of social justice, in my opinion. Opportunity is a social justice problem. And you know, that's what they want to focus on is the stupid stuff. I'm getting sick of this. I really am. You know, we want to talk about discrimination and all these other things. Okay, that's fine. But right now it's an employer's marketplace. That's as simple as it gets. You know, it is not a seller's market, it's a buyer. It's not a buyer's market, it's a seller's market. Because employers have the pick of the litter. They can choose anybody they want to. But employers are also going to choose to make more money if they can. So your temp agencies are up. These temp jobs are going crazy. The full-time employers who are actually not using these temp services are now going to part-time employment to pay for Obamacare. You look at all of these things. And we've got some serious problems in this country. We're going to move from the local issues and get into why we've got those problems right after this break. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show here on the MVM Radio Network.
Oh. Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters Radio Show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities.
Hey, everybody, gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government.
Government.
can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in their grave. The government.
I love that song. It's The Government, Ken, by comedian Tim Hawkins. And you can find that song at timhawkins.net. And I tell you, it's not the only thing he's got. He's got all kinds of neat things. And I just love the guy. He does a fantastic job. Fantastic job. You know, I tell you what, we're going into break. We're talking about poverty. And our good friend Andy had to drop off. He'll probably join us back here in a couple of minutes. We're going into all of these different problems we've got. Our money situation is completely out of control. Spending is completely out of control. You would think that we would have a president who would try to heal the nation after his first 4 years of dividing us. Instead, he decided to divide us even further today. He spent his whole speech basically trashing the conservatives, telling the whole world he's going to go ahead and push his ultra-liberal agenda, and everybody else is just going to have to jump on board his bandwagon. I mean, that's essentially what I got from it. And then we also find out today that, oh, by the way, the House is set to vote on the debt ceiling on Wednesday. But what makes it really interesting to me is, you know, they've got in here, what they decided to do is, let me see if I can pull this up for you real quick. They basically said that this vote is going to mark a change in strategy for House Republicans who run the chamber, you know, John Boehner. And they're going to, you know, they're going to remain adamant about reducing government spending, but they're not going to use the debt limit to trigger a confrontation with the president. Now, I ask you, here's a president who is in your face, who has proven time and time again that what comes out of his mouth is a lie, that he doesn't care about what he says. The proof is in the pudding, folks. He doesn't want to work together with anybody. He's flat out told the Republicans he's not going to work with them on this. You're going to cave or else. And they're refusing to take advantage of the only options available to them. So who's looking after us financially, Ed? Yeah, I think they get a laugh out of it.
Yeah. But no, I always say, hey, if you're in small business or you're employed by a small business, hey, get over it. Nobody's going to come out for you, either party. But, I think I hate to say it, and it'll be upsetting to some Republicans, and I've had a few exchanges with a few Republicans now and said, look, right, you know, the reason we got Obama's getting inaugurated is because you lost. You put up a substandard candidate, you had no original ideas, you alienated a large part of the population, and then got surprised when you lose.
Well, you know, that's interesting. You're right. I mean, it really is. And here, by the way, is something else they also went on to say that the debt increase measure will require that the House and Senate approve budgets that call for spending cuts. And if they don't, then their pay is going to be withheld in either House that fails to do so. So if the House of Representatives passes a debt increase measure that doesn't have spending cuts included, then they're not going to get paid until they do, and the same with the Senate, according to this language. But we both know that's just language. There's nothing in that that holds any weight. It's just a bait and switch kind of a deal to make us think that they're doing something when they really aren't.
Yeah.
So, I, you know, this
and
is...
And the better part of them are millionaires.
Sure.
And they're still going to get their health insurance and everything paid for, and they're probably on some kind of meal plan while they're up on the hill. They
right.
Don't say anything about their housing allowance or their staff allowances. So, yeah, all that money's going to keep coming. And then once they finally do pass a budget, they'll probably do like they do every time they have a government shutdown. And they'll give themselves back pay, even though they weren't in their offices.
Sure. And that's the whole thing. Let's go to the phones. This is our 805 number. You're on the line, caller. What can we do for you?
It's Mayo.
Hey, Mayo. How are you, sir? What's up, man?
Oh, doing pretty good. I just, you know, I mean, a lot of what you're talking about, and, you know, I heard, you know, part of what Andy said and that, and it falls back to, you know, responsibility and accountability. Responsibility, parents raising their kids the right way. You know, accountability of the parent, accountability of our government. And, you know, Martin Luther King, to me, you know, it's not the I Have a Dream speech, but his street sweeper speech, you know, about no matter what job you do, you know, take pride in it. Even if you are a street sweeper, you know, you're a man, you have a job, and you're providing for your family. And, you know, some of the things you're saying about, you know, education and a kid and, you know, drugs and dealing drugs and that. And, well, it's not just the kid, but the parent also. You know, they have to tell it, you know,
there's
it's not
no
wrong,
doubt
I'm not
about
gonna
that.
Do it in my house.
Well, there's no doubt about that. But kids also need role models. And when you're dealing with a real unemployment crisis in this country of 25% when you throw in the underemployed and everything else, and it's probably greater than that, when you're dealing with the real situation, you know, you've got to have role models. And these poverty-stricken areas, I mean, yeah, you know, we want to hold the parents accountable. And don't get me wrong, I bash parents all the time for not doing their job, and I will continue to do so from this day forward. But at the same time, it's awful hard for a parent to compete, you know, on some kind of a level. When you're telling a kid, you can ground a kid and everything else, but you and I both know, when you get to those teenage years, 14, 15, 16 years old, you know, it's more prevalent today, but even back in my day, you know, your parents can try to sell you the moon, but you're just not going to buy it anymore. And you develop your own habit. You develop your own personality. You develop your own way of doing things. And the only thing that stops you from acting on a lot of that is respect. But a lot of kids can't respect parents who don't respect themselves. So, you know, we've got to create some kind of a way to offset this social injustice. And we're certainly not going to get it from this president or the liberal agenda. I mean, let's be clear here. This is what the president said today in his speech. And I want you guys to listen to this. I'm going to read it to you because I didn't have time to download the audio. But he says, "For now, decisions are upon us and we cannot afford delay. We cannot mistake absolutism for principle or substitute spectacle for politics or treat name-calling as reasoned debate. We must act knowing that our work will be imperfect." Now, here's the deal for me. I like that. We can't treat name-calling as reasoned debate. We can't substitute spectacle for politics. We can't mistake absolutism for principle. And he has done every one of those things on a repeated basis. His whole presidency is based on that. Let's look at what he said about Paul Ryan today in his inaugural address. He took Paul Ryan and the Republicans to task today. He repeatedly calls them names and repeatedly does all of this crazy stuff that he's saying we can't do. Absolutism for principle? This guy is more of an absolutist than any president in history I can think of. This is the example that's set for this nation today, and we're going to sit here and blame the parents and for their children, and I agree the parents are primarily at fault here. But this is what they're being taught because of the division and everything else that this president has instilled across America. I don't remember a time in my lifetime, and I've been on this earth since 1963, that we have ever been divided along the lines that we are now. Do you guys? Hello? Anybody out there? Okay, Ed, you're still there. Mail dropped off. You understand what I'm saying? Because I don't get this. I do not get this. It's very interesting to me. How in the hell do we sit here and have a president who tries to speak this kind of garbage and act and does an entire 180 through his actions, Ed?
Well, that's politics. I mean, you know, it's about power consolidation, and the thing is when a politician, any politician, does that, I sometimes wonder if in the back of their mind they're sitting there saying, "Wow, they're buying this crap."
Oh no!
it's like, well, you know, he's an intelligent guy. He's got to be saying, "Hey, you know, 4 minutes ago I said we aren't going to do it, and now I'm doing it, and you're eating this crap up." All right. What can't I get away with?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's exactly it. And our good friend Robert Gardner, Robert inside the chat room right now, he says it's because no one stands up and says you lie. And he's absolutely right. Mainstream media is complicit in all of this, as we have continually pointed out. Mayo, you're back, man. You dropped for some reason, but you're back now. What's up, bud?
Oh, I just calling back. I didn't hear your last sentence, but then, you know, one of the things you just said, respect, you know, about parents. Well, not only that, but respect for your leaders. And I respect the office of the president, but I'm sorry, I do not respect Barack Obama and how he has handled his presidency. And, I mean, just some of the things, you know, like Biden saying, you know, we can spend our way out of debt. No, I don't think so. You can't shovel your way out of a hole.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other things like that. And then today also the announcement, his new, Organizing for America. And since it's a nonprofit, now corporations can donate any amount they want.
Mm-hmm.
And just like, you know, when he was running for, this is going to be the most visible presidency, you know, I'll put every law out there so every citizen can read it.
Most transparent, ethical there's ever been,
Yeah, and he's been the total opposite. You know, today one of the things he said, you know, any donations will be, you know, if people want to see them, they'll be there. Yeah, well, then how come your first day of office, the first executive order you signed was to seal all your records so the American people can't see anything?
That's a good example.
I can't remember who it was. I think it was Franklin, but it was like, if the people of this great nation ever find that they can vote themselves money, it will be the end of this great democracy. And
some derivative of that has been said since the Roman days of Cicero. And the thing is, once again, we can vote money. I would say had we had a decent fiscal policy for so many years, we could vote ourselves all the money we wanted, but we would have to take it from somebody, and that's just not going to fly real well. Of course, admittedly, since Reagan, they can vote themselves all the money they want, and it's like the old Doritos commercial. Go ahead, spend all you want. We'll make more. we'll borrow more. I think we've been stuck in a rut, and the thing that concerns me the most is we've got multiple generations that don't know anything but this. They don't know. You know, to Nixon's credit and to Carter's credit, they did stay away from deficit spending so terribly, but, since Reagan, pretty much all the presidents we have borrowed and we have printed and we have done all this to get our way out, and it's been good times, and now the bills should be coming due, but nobody wants to pay them, especially not the generations that have benefited from it most. So, I go everything from big business and the government is pitted against small business, and I'm going to take the side of small business every time. Now, I'm going to say that the political class is pitted squarely against the working class, and the working class just hasn't figured it out yet. But,
well, let's look at some serious situations here, because, you know, we're talking about the work class not figuring it out and all these other things. And, you know, Mayo just pointed out the first executive order Obama put out there. But let's look at some other examples of what Obama has done here to circumvent the American way of life and make us force into his views and vision. I mean, here's the thing. 2 days after he took office, you guys can go to WND.com and get this story, but 2 days after he took office, he rescinded by executive order the Mexico City policy. All right? That's the policy we had in place that prevented foreign aid going to organizations that perform or promote abortions. All right? No legislation, no debate. He just put an executive order and bam, we're going to send the money anyway. Now, that might not seem like a great thing to the right to life or the abortion crowd, but what it does, you know, it doesn't matter which side of the fence you're on. What it does is just say the president is going to change something if he doesn't like it. It's that simple. In early 2011, he stopped enforcing DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. Now, that law was passed by Congress and signed into law. Okay, but he directed the Department of Justice, his good friend Eric Holder, who wants to take your guns away so it's criminals who don't want to have them, to ignore the Constitution and go ahead and just not enforce the law. Well, that's not the proper procedure in the United States of America, folks. I don't care if you agree with DOMA or not. That's not the issue. Congress passed the law. Congress must rescind the law. If they don't rescind the law has to be enforced. In 2012, just last year and early last year, you know, his Health and Human Services Department set forth this big old thing we've been arguing about, the contraceptive mandate. You guys know what that's all about. It's one of the key opponents to Obamacare. It requires every employer, including religious charities and institutions, to provide free contraception to their employees. That's a clear violation of the Constitution's guarantee for freedom of conscience and freedom of religion. You know, and I can go on and on. Last June, Department of Homeland Security we're no longer going to deport young illegal immigrants who meet certain criteria. They changed these criteria to match them from the DREAM Act, but none of that's been passed into law. So how can they do this? You know, the fiscal cliff, you know, they wanted, they, you know, they actually put out this joke about this $1 trillion coin. You know, we got to look at these things, folks, and realize that this is just a matter of venting. You know, this is just a matter of venting that they want to be able to take over and enforce his will to circumvent the Constitution of the United States in doing so. And our daggone Congress, that is not his job. That is not his job.
The American people forget the power that they have. And I believe it was Reagan, he said, you know, every other country in the world has a piece of paper that the government has written to tell its citizens what they can and can't do. The United States of America, it was the first to have a piece, you know, a constitution that told the government what it could and could not do.
Right.
And the people need to remember that.
Well, that's exactly,
you know,
it.
We hold the power. We vote them into office, and,
yeah,
you know,
and I think,
but we're not,
you know,
holding them
accountable. I'm always going to say it. It's just one of the reasons that Obama does what he does, or that any president is doing what they do, is once again, is, and I've heard it numerous places amongst even some prominent Republicans. It's like, why does Obama come up with, you know, why did he circumvent the immigration laws and implement the DREAM Act and things like, you know, why did he do these things? Why did he? It's because he's not getting any type of compromise. There are no fresh ideas. It's just, I mean, when you have a senator like Mitch McConnell, who simply just wants to filibuster everything and stand up and says his goal is to make Obama a one-term president, you know, at some point you almost force the guy to do it. And you know, I've always said, you know, why don't we get Obamacare? It's because 10-plus years of a Republican Congress, they didn't do anything to fix health insurance, and it was in a death spiral. It was crushing small business. That's why we got it. You know, you want to know why we've got things like the DREAM Act, and why he would have done executive orders to, you know, and change immigration policy? Well, it's because nobody has come up with a reasonable plan since then. You know, you got the Republicans with Ronald Reagan. He gave amnesty. Everybody says, oh, never again. It's like, oh, really? Why not? really, why not? It's not like the wheels fell off the country when Reagan gave it. And it's like, oh, well, more came in. Yeah, okay. Still didn't collapse the country. You know, what are you going to do, round them all up? And there's no compromise from either side. Then you got the Democrats on one side. They're just going batshit crazy. They want to push it real far. The Republicans want to do nothing but resist. And it really is. It's a facepalm moment. It's the uniparty, as you always say, Ed. It's like, really? They're just fighting amongst themselves. And we lose.
Well,
I agree. There's failures on both sides. It doesn't, you know, like you all say, the uniparty, and that's when the people do need to stand in. And like, you know, the lamestream media, everything that they keep feeding us, and instead of being a democracy, it's like we're becoming an idiocracy because nobody's paying attention, and we're being ruled by a bunch of idiots. You know, the Republicans have had no backbone. The Democrats have had no new ideas for what, the last 30 years or more.
Right. You know, that's the whole thing. The Democrats have never had any new ideas. Most of the Democrats' ideas have been a far-left interpretation of Republican ideas. I mean, let's face facts here, Dave, okay? We're looking at today, Martin Luther King Jr., everybody wants to celebrate him, the second inaugural of the first black president. I would call him the second black president, but Obama is a white president with a liberal agenda. Bill Clinton was the first black president, but you can fight over that all day. But when you look at this, I mean, let's go back to what MLK was fighting for, civil rights. Republicans pushed it, pursued it, and passed it. Not Democrats.
Correct.
When you go back through
people
history.
People forget that.
You're, exactly. When you go back through history and you start looking at what's really, really going on, what's really, really going on here, you don't see the Democrats having any original ideas. What you see is the Democrats taking the Republican ideas to the ultimate liberal level. I mean, that's the bottom line. You know, Republicans have never been the ones who want to take away everything and make people starve. They want to give people the means to fish for a lifetime, not feed them fish for a day. There's a big difference there. And that's the problem with your liberal and your Democrats. But today we've got a completely different problem because almost half the people, or right at 50% of the people, rely on government assistance. Daddy Obama is giving you a free phone. We've got over 11,000 new people added to the food stamp rolls every single day under Barack Obama's leadership. More and more people have become so dependent on federal government dollar assistance that no one has any incentive to go out and work. I mean, even if you're living in poverty, folks, if you're not starving and you got a roof over your head, it don't cost you anything to do that, you're doing pretty good. Not the greatest standard of living, but you're still getting by. Go ahead.
I'll just, I mean, something with what you said earlier, you know, about the kids and the jobs, and why is it, why are there 10 states? It's like Washington. They just raised their minimum wage now. It's like $10.19, Washington State. And there's nine other states that their minimum wage is in the $9 range. If,
that's a good question.
If would go up to that, it would help. And then the second thing, a lot of these people that are, you know, trying, you know, why is all of a sudden being well off or rich a sin? You know, when, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing wrong with being, you know, smart enough to create a project or, you know, an invention mm-hmm. or something else. You know, but, train of thought, sorry. The right to work state, is Kentucky one, like Florida? How come they haven't kept up with this? If it would stay at a level, Arizona was one of the first, and the governor, you know, said nobody can live on this.
Mm-hmm.
But yet the politicians every year, they give themselves a raise, you know, past the cost of living.
Yeah.
Well, understand this, though. Now
well,
you know, I've got to get...
You got to get back to cause and effect. It's like Ed was saying earlier, you know, it's a buyer's market when it labor. And that's because, I mean, I'm an employer. I have to admit it. I would love to see it if I actually had to compete for employees. If I had to go in to somebody and say, hey, it would be so awesome if a qualified employee would come through and, you know, he could say, well, you know, yeah, I'm thinking about your job, but this job over here is paying more. Are you going to match them? Hey, that's where we need to get to, but we're nowhere near there. And when they talk about raising minimum wage, I have quite a few friends, especially in this industry I'm in. They're experts at automation, you know, and you always hear people say, oh, they'll exploit the jobs here, they'll exploit the jobs there. So they're mm-hmm. doing this. It's like, dude, been to Walmart lately? Been to Kroger lately?
I want to straighten up.
They have self-checkout aisles. Have you checked out the pharmacy lately? They've got a machine that picks the drugs and bottles the drugs for you.
Well, they're totally, yeah. Technology. Well, technology is eliminating jobs, but the reality is the tech jobs are...
great jobs.
Yeah, you know, I mean, let's face facts here. You know, it's never been the technology that costs the biggest amount of money. It's always been the monkeys that run things, the monkeys that produce. That's us. We, the middle class, the working people. You know, technology, there is technology out there that's going to eliminate jobs. But we're not doing any manufacturing in this country anymore. We continue sending our manufacturing overseas. We're not doing one damn thing. GE's Jeffrey Ironmelt is a big joke. Obama's good buddy, his jobs are, is a big joke. He's exported more jobs than he's ever imported since he's been in charge of GE. We continue to look at these things. And by the way, I've got to straighten out one thing here, Mayo. You mentioned that Congress continues to give themselves a raise. That's not exactly true. They are mandated. They are mandated by law to get this raise, but each and every session for, God, how many years now, they have declined to accept that raise. So Congress is not taking more money in raises. I've actually got to give them credit for that. However, we look at the big picture here. They're making the laws. Of course, every congressman is getting rich. There's nobody that's went to Congress who's not richer when they leave than they were when they got there. So, you know, you look at Walmart like you're talking about, Ed. You look at the technology and the pharmacies and things like that. Okay, you look at us outsourcing all our manufacturing jobs overseas to Mexico and whoever, China. You know, what is the real problem here? Why is it that we're so scared to produce a product here in the United States of America? What are the politicians gaining from eliminating our jobs? What are they gaining?
Well, the major corporations are actually gaining profitability if they can sub your jobs off somewhere else and they can pollute while they do it. And they can find somebody to work it cheaper and things like that. And, of course, now a lot of politicians own stocks in those companies. And a lot of politicians seem to end up lobbying for those companies. It gets back to it that the politicians and the corporate class, they're up there with the big money. They're up there with we're 0% interest rates from the Fed benefit them. They're at the level, you know, they're not going to be the guy working on the line at GE whose job might get exported. They're going to be the upper management, their nephew or whatever. It's going to be upper management at GE that's going to get a bonus check because he put cost out of it. So there's a huge
between the working
class and you know, the political class, the corporate
and
class. And that's what they are. They're elitist. They're so far above us, at least they think they are. They don't give a crap about small business. They don't really give a crap about small workers. They just want to maintain a loyal block of voters, and they want to sit there in their upper echelon, whether it's in a corporate level or a lobbying level or a political office level, and they're going to get rich. And they don't
give a that's the whole thing. It's called corporatocracy, as our good friend Paul Hager over at Stop It continues to point out. That's the whole thing. These guys are on the inside. They know how to manipulate the stocks. They know how to get their part. They buy stock in a few companies, and they promote them. John Yarmuth, our congressman, is the king of that. He promotes Obamacare, which is going to help fund his nursing homes that he still owns or still owns stock in. Of course he wants Obamacare. It's going to make him money. So they get to buy an extra yacht. They get to buy an extra mansion. They get to make sure their kids aren't held accountable for anything. And the rest of us working stiffs have to lose out again. It's always about greed and the corporate dollar. Now, greed, folks, for lack of a better word, as they say in Wall Street, is good. It is good.
Motivator.
I agree with that statement from Wall Street. Greed is good. But you got to be careful what you're greedy for. Okay, these corporations have bought the politicians so that they are so greedy for money, they don't care about the rest of us. We have to be greedy enough to take that money back. We have to be
greedy to the point that they bend the rules. They bend the rules to where it's not a capitalist system anymore. It's a crony. It's a corporatist. It's crony capitalism. And that's not right, you know. We'll duke it out on a fair field, but damn it, when you got some politician in your pocket writing laws, securing loans, and otherwise crushing the competition with legislation while freeing you up, mm-hmm. that's not capitalism.
No, it's not. Go ahead, Dale.
I was just going to say, kind of go with what, you know, Dale might say. I mean, you keep the people poor, then the government stays in power because then they're dependent, you know, upon the government for their, you know, their welfare check and their food stamps, et cetera. And then the thing that I couldn't remember a minute ago, I wanted to say, I couldn't remember who did say it, and it's the truth. Nobody poorer than me has ever given me a job. So, you know, the tax breaks, other things, which do help the moral people who do have businesses and that, and they actually create real jobs in the United States. No problem with it, but then like things like what, you know, you're saying about GE or Solyndra or other things, it's like, okay, we gave you a chance, you failed, you know, there's some accountability here, pay the money back. You know, I mean, either change some of the bankruptcy laws, something.
Well, they just changed, you know, those, so now even if you file a Chapter 7 bankruptcy, you still get to pay that for the rest of your life until it's paid off. They've changed the bankruptcy law so where the middle class still suffers. It benefits the corporation. They've even taken the one tool away that people could use to give themselves a fresh start and start all over, because the companies always write that off as a loss, so it doesn't really cost them any real money, if you will. Because, you know, let's say somebody bankrupts $50,000, that $50,000 is a tax write-off, so it saves them money. But that's another show all in itself we're really going to get into. You know, we are in overdrive, and we really need to wrap up. Mayo, I appreciate you calling in, my friend. Thank you, as always. I'm sure we'll probably listen to you tomorrow night. For you guys, Ed, final thoughts?
Well, I admit I didn't keep up with the inauguration today because I was working.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm going to read up on it. And as I have mentioned to a few people that I've talked to today, and they're like, oh, you know, it's so terrible, or oh, it's so great, or whatever.
Right.
And I just told them, I said, look, you know what, it's the same as it was yesterday and the week before and the month before. I said, you know, it's just put your big boy pants on and go to work. That's all you can really do now. We're locked down for 2 years before the next round of elections. You know, we hope they don't Bohica us too bad, which, by the way, Bohica stands for bend over, here it comes again. And we hope they don't get Bohica too bad. But aside from that, nothing's going to change for a few years, so just hunker down, do the best you can. And I would suggest that people try to live their lives unlike the government. Don't borrow. Don't live beyond your means. So that's really, in the big picture, that's the only control we've got for a while until enough people wake up and decide to take some things back and level the playing field from the corporatocracy to back to a good democracy, back to a good republic, back to a real capitalist system where winners win and losers lose. Until then, like I said, put your big boy pants on, get your ass to work.
Well, there you go. You know, and our friend Robert Garding says in the chat room, and by the way, folks, check out wiseconservatism.com. Mr. Garding has his own website, wiseconservatism.com, and he also has a Saturday morning radio show for you guys who love conservative radio. But as he says in a chat room, he says that the Constitution doesn't give us the right to a job. It just gives us the right to look for a job. You know, our Constitution guarantees us the right to pursue happiness. It doesn't guarantee that you're going to be happy. That's the bottom line. People want to think that, well, I'm supposed to be happy, so the president and everybody else has to give me something to make me happy. That's garbage. You have the right to pursue happiness. If you want a new car and that's what's going to make you happy, guess what? You've got the right to pursue a job that's going to pay you enough money to pay for that car. And then go out and buy your damn car if that's going to make you happy. If you want a bigger house, you have the right to pursue a job that's going to give you enough money to buy that bigger house, and then you can be happy in your bigger house. Whatever it is that you want, that you think you need to be happy, you have got the right in this country to pursue a means legally that will help you attain that happiness that you want to achieve. That doesn't mean that it's guaranteed. That does not mean that it's guaranteed. And that's what people in this country have to get back to and start remembering. We have to get off our butts and get back to work. We have to have a daggone government that's understanding of that and is going to work with us to ensure that we have those opportunities. Our government is not supposed to hand us things. The only thing our government is supposed to do is secure legally the opportunities available to us from our Constitution. That's it. Great story came out last week. Some of you guys will be angry. Some of you guys will be happy. A gentleman by the name of Terry Lee, a Utah business owner, fired two people. And everybody's wanting to know why. Because Obamacare, he says that the health care reform bill has forced him to do layoffs. So rather than just lay off through any other means, he decided he was going to lay off his liberal employees who voted for Obama. He let two employees go purely because they voted for Barack Obama and supported Obamacare. And there was nothing illegal about that. See, some of these employers know this. Now, do I think that there was a great moral thing here? Probably not. You know? But there was nothing illegal with him doing that. If you want to vote for Obama, no problem. I'm going to let you go because I can't afford to pay everybody, so you're the first ones on the totem pole. He had the balls to take a stand. He's getting chastised on a national level. But he had the balls to take a stand. You've got people out there that are willing to do that each and every day. We do it every day right here on this show through my website at LouisvillePolitics.com or EdSpringston.com. We do it every single day. We take on those like Judy Green, Barbara Shanklin, Jim King, people that we feel are corrupt officials who are misusing your tax money. But no one individual can stand alone. America has to wake up and stand for liberty and freedom. We have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It's high time we started learning what that little document that was written a few hundred years ago really means and start practicing it every day. That's it. I don't know what else to tell you. Tonight, that's it for tonight. Tomorrow night, Mr. Martin will be back at 7 o'clock, as always, for this show, and we'll get into a few other topics. Wednesday night, Dale the Truth, of course, joins us at 7. And don't forget the TNT Thursday Night True Show on Thursday night at 7. And Ken Mulman, you guys check out his archive from last night's Sunday podcast of Liberty Unbridled. In the meantime, Mr. Martin, thank you so much.
All right, Mr. Springston. Stay warm. It's going to get cold out there, my friend.
Well, you know what? I'm always warm. I'm a warm-blooded. I've got a warm heart, and I'm so hot-headed because I get so angry at this liberal agenda. I'm never cold.
You're just a big warm fuzzball.
There you go. Not a fuzzball no more, but I haircut today. All right.
It'd
be good, man. We'll talk to you. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. We will talk to you real soon. Don't forget to check out LouisvillePolitics.com, and we'll see you tomorrow. Take care.